Crazy Buddhist, a conversation about Buddhist ideas, Buddhist teaching, Buddhism in the real world with Reverend Jerry Hirano. As we move through the holiday season, there's one you might not have heard of, a Buddhist holiday called Bodhi Day. Jodo Shinshu Buddhists mark December 8th to remember Buddha's enlightenment. Reverend Jerry Hirano is Utah-born and raised, and a lifelong Buddhist, as well as an ordained minister in the Jodo Shinshu or Pure Land tradition. We sat down to remember the occasion and to celebrate what it represents. We'll also take a few minutes in this episode of Crazy Buddhist to remember the thousands of Japanese Americans who were interned in U.S. government camps during World War II, a tragic and pointless infringement on their civil rights. Reverend Hirano was called on recently to observe a memorial at the site of the Topaz internment camp near Delta, Utah, where a man who was killed by a camp guard in 1943 was remembered. I'm Dan Bomas. Delighted you could join us today.
Well, happy Bodhi Day to you.
Happy Bodhi Day.
And is this a real thing, a real tradition in Buddhist groups in the United States?
For most Buddhist groups, it is. In our tradition, it's in Jodo Shinshu, it's actually called Jodo-e, which means gathering because of the completion of the path. Because Bodhi Day is when Siddhartha Gautama became the Buddha.
Okay, I also understand it commemorates his birth and death as well as enlightenment.
That is Vaisak, which is Mahayana usually doesn't do Vaisak. It's more of a Theravada Southeast Asian tradition where they celebrate the birth, death, and enlightenment all as one holiday, and they usually do that in the spring. It changes because it's a lunar calendar-based holiday.
Mm-hmm. But Bodhi Day is always December 8th?
Yeah. It's strongly Japanese Buddhist. I don't know how much it is with Chinese, but Japanese Buddhist, so my whole life, I've always known December is Bodhi Day.
Mm-hmm. And it's something that we can add to the fun of the winter holidays with Hanukkah, with Christmas. But is this something that you'd like to see more widely observed?
It would be nice if it was more widely observed. But because I've taught at my temples all the time that I say, when we say the holiday season, my feeling has always been it begins with Thanksgiving. Then we have Bodhi Day. Then we have, well, if you're Jewish, you have the Hanukkah tradition. Then there's Christmas. New Year's is a big Asian tradition. And then in January, we have what's called Honko, which is the memorial service for the founder of our sect. And that's considered the biggest Jodo Shinshu holiday of the year.
So bigger even than Obon?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, run through those. What is the Bodhi Day tradition, and then this other holiday that I
Bodhi
honestly
Day
haven't heard of?
Is like I said, when there isn't a lot of actual special rituals for Bodhi Day, but I've mentioned this in a number of places. But when I was a child at my temple, at one time, they didn't want to give in saying, oh, we're celebrating Christmas. So on Bodhi Day one year, they stuck a Christmas tree in the altar. And they said, this is the Bodhi tree. And I remember when I must have been in elementary school, I'm thinking in my head, that is not a Bodhi tree. That's a Christmas tree. And they gave us little candies because the story of when Siddhartha Gautama became enlightened, the way he got the strength to go through his last meditation was he took some rice gruel from this young girl by the name of Sujata, gained his strength, meditated, and then he became enlightened. So I guess they gave us that little treat.
Mm-hmm. And he had to stare down Mara, the Buddhist version of the devil, to do that.
Right. One of my favorite, if you want to see an interesting version of that, is in a movie called Little Buddha that was done by Bernardo Bertolucci.
That's the one with Keanu Reeves.
he plays the Buddha, and they have a whole section of his enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
I actually like that version quite a bit.
Okay, and you talk about this Bodhi tree being set up at your temple, but what did families actually do with this, and what happened at the temple?
It was just a regular, like a Sunday service that we had with sutra chanting, and then usually we would tell the story of the Buddha becoming the Buddha on that day. And then they would give all the kids these little candy bars, mm-hmm, and say, take it home and put it on your altar at home.
Don't eat it.
And don't eat it yet. Thank the Buddha, and then you could eat it.
Okay. Tell us the story of this other holiday. When is that, and how is it observed?
Hongko is on January 16th. It is the memorial day for the founder of our sect of Jodo Shinshu. And so since it's usually the first part of the year, most temples, like my temple, also combines it with like a New Year's party for all the members.
Mm-hmm.
But in Japan, at the mother temple in Kyoto, it's a big several day holiday. It's, like I said, it's the biggest holiday that our sect of Buddhism has, and it's called Honko, which means to repay with gratitude the debt of gratitude we owe to the founder for bringing us these teachings.
Talk a little bit about him, Shinran.
Shinran was from about 1200s. He was a Tendai priest, a monk, for close to 20 years, but he thought, what is going on? You know, here I have been practicing as a monastic for 20 years and haven't gained enlightenment. So he, at that time, Mount Tiantai, was a big Tendai school of Buddhism. And that's where the largest monastery, the main monastery in Japan, was. And many very famous Japanese founders had studied here. And then he left every night for a number of weeks to go and meditate in a hall called Rokkakudo, which is in the center of Kyoto. And he had this dream that he should follow this teacher by the name of Honen. And Honen is actually the founder of Jodo Shu, which is a different sect of Buddhism, but he's a very famous scholar monk. And he's the one who really created the Nembutsu path, the recitation of Namu Amida Butsu. He said, you don't have to do all this meditation. Just say Namu Amida Butsu. And so this is the path that Shinran followed.
And this was in contrast to some of the Zen schools that kind of catered to the elite, to the samurai class,
right.
And the Jodo Shu and Jodo Shinshu schools reached out to everybody, to farmers and peasants.
Exactly. Jodo Shinshu particularly, that's how it became so big. But it wasn't immediately big. Shinran was, like I said, in the 1200s. His eighth generation descendant, who is called Renyo, he is the one who really started to preach and emphasize that this teaching is not for the elite. And he emphasized teachings for women, for peasants. And that's how Jodo Shinshu became the biggest sect in Japan. It is said to have been the reason why the feudal system actually stopped.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Jizo Bosatsu, a bodhisattva in Buddhist teaching, someone who is enlightened but has renounce nirvana for the benefit of others? Where did Jizo come from, and tell us where he fits in?
Jizo is, there's really, I would say, three main bodhisattvas within the Mahayana tradition, and they talk about the first two is Seishi and Kannon, who are the attendant bodhisattvas to Amida Buddha, the central Buddha in Jodo Shinshu. But then the third bodhisattva is called Jizo, and he is, in Sanskrit they call him Chantigarbha, I think in Chinese it's Pinyin, but he's the we talked about Obon a little bit before, the story of one of Buddha's main disciples, Mokuren, who saw his mother in hell.
We talked about him in The Hungry Ghost.
Right, in The Hungry Ghost, exactly.
Okay.
And Jizo Bosatsu means bodhisattva, is in every realm of existence. That's his main pledge was to save all beings in the hell realms, or any of the six realms, and Gaki was the realm of the hungry ghost that we talked about. But he's in all those realms to make sure everybody is saved. And in particular, he's also known for taking care of children. Right? He was the bodhisattva for children, bodhisattva for travelers. And that's why I've used a story, which is appropriate maybe for Christmas time, is I used to, half tongue-in-cheek, but I says, well, if, you know, people always make up the origins of Santa Claus. I could actually see Jizo as being an early version of Santa Claus, because he's always dressed in red clothes. He wears a red cap. He carries a big sack, and in some of the sutras there, he has attendants. Some say it's this Mokuren disciple, but others say that there's two little attendants called Shōaku, which means truly bad, or Shōkuzen, which means truly good. And these two little attendants, who are hidden kind of inside his robes, keep track of if you're good or bad. And so Jizo knows whether you've been a good person or a bad person. And he's wearing these red clothes. So at my house, at least, during this time of the year, I dress up my Jizo statue with the little Santa Claus hat.
But unlike Santa Claus, clean shaven and actually bald.
Right.
No white hair, yeah. No beard.
No white, but he has, in some traditions, he does have a belly.
Mm-hmm.
And he carries a sack. I'm not exactly sure what they say the sack holds, but it's close enough.
Okay, different from, though, Putai, who's the big belly happy Buddha that we sometimes see.
Yeah, Putai or Hotte.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's just a person who was, you know, the wise fool of Buddhist legend, I guess.
Hotte.
Yes.
Hotte, yeah. Yeah, that's why he's always happy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But Jizo is, like I said, one of the three major bodhisattvas in all sects of at least Mahayana Buddhism. And Jizo, as I said, there's different names. Some call him the, I think it's Daigan, the Bodhisattva of the Great Vow, because his vow was to save all these people, like I said.
Is he something like a Christian saint where you pray for his intercession?
Oh, almost, because if you go to Japan, whenever you come to an old road intersection, there's usually a lot of Jizo. One is because he's also said to be the protector of travelers.
This is kind of like Saint Christopher.
Right. And so you'll see all these little Jizo Bosatsus. And then, as I said, he's especially the protector of children. So a family who've lost children will, you know, more or less hope that Jizo is taking care of their child. So that's why, that's actually what the red clothes are. The red clothes aren't Santa clothes like here, but they're supposed to be like children's clothes. Like when you become 60 years old in most Asian traditions, it's a big birthday because you've completed the 12 cycles of the various animals and the five types of those cycles. So 60 means you've completed everything. So you were a child again. So on your 60th birthday, they put a red hat on you with a little red bib.
I like this. I'm 65, but yeah. I missed mine.
Yeah, that's why it's called Kondeki, which is a big, it's one of the major holidays in your life. It's the first big holiday because you've completed all the, you made it to complete all these cycles.
And running through this is a thread of gratitude. That's a major theme of Jodo Shinshu Buddhism in any case. Right. So does it fit with, I guess, our perception of the season, you know, peace on earth, goodwill?
That's why, for myself, I'm a, you know, I've been a priest for what, 30 something years. And even before that, I used to say that if my father had told me Buddhists don't celebrate Christmas, I would have very strongly told him, well, Dad, then I guess I'm not a Buddhist. And even as a priest now, I think we should celebrate Christmas, even for Jesus's birthday. You know, I know if we go into these academic things, they say, Jesus wasn't really born on December 25th or all these things. But if we recognize Jesus and we're talking about gratitude, if you are a Buddhist or if you are an American, period, if you can't be grateful for Jesus, you don't get the whole message. So in my book, I would be grateful for Jesus's birth and celebrate his birth. It's a chance for me to celebrate with all my friends, you know, and that's why I really like this holiday season. I put up a Christmas tree, I put up lights at my home, and I have Jizo in his little Santa Claus suit.
Even though it's not.
Right.
It's, and I guess, do people ask you about it, or do you ever have the chance to explain?
Yeah, people do ask, do Buddhists celebrate Christmas? I says, well, this Buddhist does. And I think that it's important. It's very important to recognize these opportunities. And Christmas is a great opportunity to express gratitude. I used to tell my children, and it was a kind of big ritual whenever, I don't see it so much nowadays, but when they were growing up, you know, they're 26 and 22 now, but there used to be a lot of Salvation Army bell ringers. And I says, anytime you see those people, tell me, because I says, if I don't see them, you tell me. So their big thing was to run to me, Daddy, Daddy, there's the bells. And we would put money into Salvation Army, those cans. And I said, those are the bells of enlightenment. So that's the sound of enlightenment, of someone doing something for others. You know, so this whole gratitude thing is totally what Jodo Shinshu Buddhism is about. And my feeling is if you close your mind off to that, you're not getting the entire message that Buddhism is trying to teach you about grateful for this interconnectedness of all of us, whatever your religion is.
Let's turn to a sadder story, but not one that's less meaningful, of the service you conducted last week in memory of a person who died at the Topaz camp where Japanese Americans were interned during World War II. Tell me about that and what role you played in that.
Well, I held a memorial service at the Topaz, the site of the old Topaz concentration camp, because there was a man by the name of James Wakasa who was shot by a guard there for supposedly the guard says he thought he was escaping, but everybody in the camp knew he was a 63-year-old man who had a little dog, and he would walk this dog every evening around the by the fence. And everyone knew that.
Except this guard, apparently.
Yeah, apparently. But this guard, from what I hear, according to things I've heard from different people, he had had trouble anyway with just Japanese.
And this is barely in living memory anymore. The people who were interned there are pretty elderly now.
I think it's like 78. So the people who came were the descendants of people in Topaz. Some, I think, are somehow related to him. Although he didn't have any children, they're still related, and they're from mostly the Bay Area. But anyway, what happened is there was a huge funeral during that time, about 78 years ago, where a couple thousand of the camp members held a funeral for this James Wakasa, who was a Christian. And after the authorities, well, they had the funeral, and then these Japanese created a monument where he was shot out of rocks around the area and some cement. But this is like a 1,000-pound monument. And when the camp officials heard that, they demanded that they destroy it. But the Japanese, what they did, these people, they buried it where this happened. And a woman by the name of Nancy Ukai, who was a researcher for various things, historian in the Bay Area, found a map that says that this is where it was buried. And with that map, they were able to have some archaeology people pinpoint, and they went out there and they found a little tiny, they saw a thing poking out from the ground out of the desert floor. And they dug down and they found that here was this monument. And so they wanted to have archaeologists come and, you know, carefully take it out. But I don't blame Jane Beckwith either, although I could see both sides of the stories. Some of these families were upset that it was roughly taken out of the area with a backhoe. It's a 1,000-pound rock.
And who's Jane Beckwith?
Oh, Jane Beckwith is the head of the Topaz Museum in Delta.
So someone who's worked to keep this history alive.
Oh, really? And she's worked very hard. She was instrumental, I believe, in creating the museum. There's a museum, the Topaz Museum in Delta, and she runs that. So she's not just, you know, to me, in some ways, it kind of upsets me. These people have said that she did. She's even Jane Beckwith says, you know, I should have contacted her more, maybe, you know, but she was worried that there is vandalism out at Topaz. It's in the middle of the desert, if you've ever been there. And monuments the National Park Service have put up have been all shot up in the past. And it's right by, as they said, he was walking along the fence line. So it's at the very edge of the 600-something acres that was Topaz. And it could have been vandalized quite easily. And so Jane Beckwith took it, and now it's at the Topaz Museum. But these families flew out, and myself, along with State Senator Janie Uemoto, we went and took part in this service. And they had it was said that the camp, the people who are in the camp, since there's no flowers out in Delta, if you've ever been, they created paper flowers and a paper flower cross for this funeral. So these family members created a paper flowered cross that we set up. Then I had my own obutsudan, the altar for Buddhists, and had a little memorial service out there for him.
Mm-hmm. Not a whole lot of people, but found it meaningful.
Right.
And there's probably an ongoing difference of opinion of just how this should have been handled.
Yeah, but my feeling is it's something that should not be forgotten. You know, I didn't know a lot about it. You don't hear too many about that there was a killing in Topaz.
Mm-hmm. Why did they ask you to do this service when this gentleman was Christian?
Well, I think the reason was they asked someone from the Christian church. I don't know if it was Salt Lake's Japanese Christian church or what, but they couldn't get a Christian minister to, you know, Topaz is kind of way out there. But someone who's on their board for this Wakasa Memorial Board is Reverend Dr. Duncan Williams, who I know, and he's at USC, and he couldn't come out, or else he would have probably done the service, but he knows me, and so he told him, well, Jerry Hirano lives in Salt Lake, why don't you contact him? And I go to Topaz every summer and do a service just for myself, for Obon, to recognize and remember.
What does that place mean to you?
To me, it's recognize that America has many faces, like I talked about at that service. You know, like I said, last year I drove 15,000 miles to really see America, because I went to all 48 states just to see, say I've been to all 48 states. And Topaz is a part of what it is, America in the past. And if we forget that we do have those type of atrocities as Americans, we'll do it again. That's why the Japanese Americans spoke out extremely strongly of these anti-Middle Eastern things that were happening after 9/11, when the children were stuck in the camps in Texas. You know, that our community has went through this before. Although we have come back stronger in many ways, we have a responsibility to try to make sure it doesn't happen to others.
Well, Jerry, happy Bodhi Day to you.
Merry Christmas. And
thank you very much. And it's a delight to hear some of these great stories and big ideas.
Thank you, Dan.
Jerry Hirano is the minister at the Salt Lake Buddhist Church, a congregation established more than 100 years ago. He's also the supervising minister for temples in Ogden and Honeyville, Utah, and in Ontario, Oregon. Hirano Sensei is also director of the Center for Buddhist Education for the Buddhist Churches of America. He is the minister at the Salt Lake Buddhist Temple in Salt Lake City, as well as supervising minister for temples in Ogden and Honeyville, Utah, and in Ontario, Oregon. I'm Dan Bomas, and we're grateful you've taken the time to listen to Crazy Buddhist. Please leave us a rating or a review, and we'll be back soon.